Hello, and thank you for joining us. This is Sue Colvin bringing you the AFS Fisheries Society Virtual Annual Meeting Overview on behalf of the Fisheries Podcast, a weekly podcast that shares the stories of the amazing people and projects that make up fisheries science. If you haven't already, follow the podcast on Twitter at Fisheries Pod, on Facebook, or support the podcast on Patreon or Teespring if you feel so inclined. My guest today is Joe Conroy, the AFS 2020 Virtual Meeting Program Chair and Fisheries Biology Supervisor with the Ohio Department of Natural Resources. Joe, thanks for joining me today to talk about the AFS Society meeting. Before we get started, let's talk a little about your work. What do you do with the ODNR?
Sure. I've been with the Division of Wildlife for about 10 years, and I currently supervise our inland research unit, which runs a number of projects throughout the state, helps to coordinate all of our standardized sampling and creel surveys, that sort of thing. We work from the Ohio River through a number of streams and rivers throughout the state, and also are charged with managing the 170 inland reservoirs in coordination with district fish management staff. So we get around throughout the state, and we work in all of the systems other than that one lake up on the North Shore, Lake Erie. So we see a lot of our state.
That seems like a lot of reservoirs for one state, is it?
Well, it's nothing like the, you know, 10,000 lakes in other states that we hear so much about. So
right,
we have,
right.
Yeah, we have about 25 fisheries biologists in Ohio, maybe another dozen or so technical staff. So we're a relatively small fish staff, but we think we do a lot of work, and we're always working to get better, you know, more efficient. And really, we work through something we call the Inland Management System, which is our standardized sampling program to hit the right places with the right priority and the right amount of sampling. And, you know, that's something we work really hard on is understanding what our data are telling us about our populations.
No easy task. So, Joe, are you going to present at the meeting this year?
I actually was planning to present at the meeting this year, but my duties as the program chair have really made it such that I am not able to present. I'm a co-author on a couple of talks, and I've been able to preview some of the things that the authors of those presentations have been putting together. And I'll tell you, I'm pretty excited about the pre-recorded format. It's so different. And I think that all of these pre-recorded talks are going to be, you know, really informative for people who don't ordinarily get to see presentations.
Oh, that's terrific. So how did you get involved in the first place with the annual meeting?
Well, it was scheduled to be in Columbus, Ohio, and the Ohio chapter was going to be firmly involved or thickly involved in all of the planning aspects. And we were up until about mid-March when, you know, COVID hit and everybody, the thought of having a meeting just became non-existent, really. And it really wasn't until mid-June that we really decided to transition to the virtual approach. And at that point, a number of the Ohio chapter members who were responsible for like in-person registration or, you know, the on-site coordination kind of dropped away from the meeting. And I decided that I was going to continue on and had good support from, you know, my boss and others to continue in my role. And so I've been really happy to participate in the virtual annual meeting.
Oh, I didn't know that you kind of in midstream, so to speak, switched into that leadership role. So thank you for that.
Yeah, I was originally part of the program. I was the program chair for the Columbus meeting and just basically picked up and continued doing the same job in the virtual space. So it was an interesting transition.
That's awesome. A true fisheries biologist. Just take whatever circumstances you're given.
That's it.
So how difficult was it really to switch to a virtual meeting?
Well, it was just like everything else during the pandemic, you know, just a lot of uncertainty and unknowns. I mean, we haven't done this before. We're so used to the on-site in-person interaction and how that works that this transition to a virtual meeting was something completely different. And I've been really struck by how committed society staff members from Bethesda have been in making sure that this goes off really well and serves the members. And I think we're all working together to ensure that we have the right meeting for the right reasons to communicate our science and get people together and really, you know, celebrate all the things that the society does.
That's fantastic. Do you want to outline some challenges and also opportunities that kind of came with approaching a virtual meeting?
Sure. So, you know, one of the things that we jumped off from was the spring virtual meeting, which was really a collection of moderated sessions that were, I'm going to say, you know, they were transitioned from in-person meetings that were scheduled in the spring that were all canceled into this virtual space. And so that gave us some example of how we might go about doing this. And we really tried to transition from that into, you know, what would really serve the membership well. And so one of the biggest challenges was just coming up with the right software approach. You know, how do you bring a bunch of people together online? How do you host pre-recorded presentations? You know, what do interactive events look like in the online space? And so we've really been learning all of this along the way. And like I said, the society staff has been instrumental in that transition. They demoed a number of different software packages. Very early on, we made the choice to go to a on-demand pre-recorded presentation to serve viewers who are spread throughout the world, really, at least the various time zones here in North America and Central and South America. We're going to have some members joining us from Europe, some other people joining us from Asia. And so we wanted to be able to have a meeting where everybody could see the content and they weren't really restricted to any preset timelines. You know, we didn't want to have the conference from 8 to 5 Eastern time because we knew that didn't work for everyone. And also we were really worried about fatigue, you know, if you have too long of sessions. And so we decided on using the pre-recorded on-demand approach for our presentations. And we're going to have 2-hour blocks during that 2-week period in September from the 14th to the 25th, where we're going to have live events and hosted events where we can interact with each other and also have a number of plenaries. So I think we've got all the components of the meeting just arranged in a different way. And I think it's a pretty exciting approach.
14th to the 25th of September is when the meeting takes place. For those folks out there that might be planning an online meeting, do you want to quick name drop a couple things that you learned about software or maybe some directions that they can go to seek out some platforms that might work for them?
Yeah, sure. So we're using Confex, Conference Exchange, I think is what the full name of the company is. And this is the software that is ordinarily used by AFS to collect and collate abstracts and also arrange sessions for on-site meetings. And so this company has transitioned into the virtual space also during the COVID pandemic. And so it's been interesting because their capabilities are improving as our understanding of what can be done has been improving. And so we've been kind of evolving with each other through this process. And they've been hosting some other meetings along the way. And so we've learned a lot from their best practices. I think it's the intent of AFS staff to attempt to develop a best practices guide for divisions and chapters which may have to transition into virtual space. I know there's been, there are other meetings that are planned or going on that are using some other technologies. And I would say that, you know, for Confex, it seems to have all the capabilities that you need. And it's also pretty flexible once you really understand how it works. It may seem a little, it did to me at least, it seemed a little arcane to begin with, but now I think I'm getting a better feel for it. And their developers and the people that we contact with there have been really responsive to our needs through the development of this conference.
That's fantastic. You've learned a whole new trade. That's excellent.
I have. Please, yeah, party planner.
Yeah, please stay with us in fisheries.
That's it.
So one of the initial things that, you know, people were kind of tossing around is that a lot of people relate that they go to the meetings for the professional interactions. And so how will you maintain that environment?
Yeah, and that's one of the largest challenges, and really that was something we were asking ourselves all along, was how do we have all of those great interactions in the virtual space that you'd have in an in-person meeting? And I think the first realization is that, you know, it takes everyone to make that happen. You know, you have to be a willing participant. You have to, you know, complete all of your details and your profile when that's available on the website. You have to reach out to people. And so what we've really tried to do is provide all of the activities of a normal conference. So we're going to have all of our section meetings, all of our division meetings, you know, chapter meetings will be happening during the first week. So you have some live interaction in that. And then in the second week, we're going to be having more of the symposium, interactive events, the discussion groups, that sort of aspect. We have a film festival, a couple film festival nights planned to interact with some of the people responsible for some environmental films. We've got some virtual happy hours and things like that planned to go along with it. But ultimately, I think it comes down to the participants to get out of the meeting what they want. And you can only get out what you put in. It's sort of that old adage. And so I think that's what we're working for. One of the biggest opportunities, I think, in this meeting is that we're going to have about 750 or so presentations pre-recorded and available to view. So you can see as many of those once you register. You can see as many of those presentations as you want. And you have, you know, you're going to have time to view those. So it's not just open for the 2 weeks of the meeting. We're going to extend that out a little while after the meeting to give people the opportunity to view all the science they want. Ordinarily, when you're at a meeting, you know, you can only see one talk at a time. Here, you can view as many as you really want. One of the other really nice functionality in the Confex system is that they're going to have an asynchronous Q&A. So there will be a chat box associated with each presentation. And so you can leave a question for the author. The author will get a notification that a question was left, and they can log in and answer your question. And so we hope that we can facilitate some interaction that way. So that these are certainly some non-traditional ways of doing this. You know, we won't be going out to dinner with people who we've just met at the conference, but we do hope that this is still fills that live interaction that everyone needs for a professional conference.
Definitely. Although I think I'm going to miss like marking my schedule up and then seeing how fast I can run from one building to another, because that's always a good time.
That's for sure.
So there's a new upload deadline, and that really matters for a lot of us. And so that's probably something that we should mention right away. And what is the new upload deadline?
The new deadline, which is a hard deadline, there won't be another extension beyond this, is September 1st. I would recommend all the listeners who are presenting to upload before that, because you know how it is when 300 people are trying to access the same web server, you know. So you want to get it in a little bit early if you can. We've already got just about 100 talks already submitted. And so the technical staff at Confex are reviewing those as we speak. And so that's one of the main reasons we had set the deadline so early in the beginning, was that we wanted to give, or actually there was a request for enough time to view all of these presentations. And so that's what we're trying to do, is give that extra, you know, couple weeks for presenters to upload their presentations. We did hear from people at the end of last week requesting that, and that's what we were able to get that extended.
Any advice on what kind of software folks might check out to record their presentation?
Well, the really nice thing is that Confex has prepared a number of different options and directions to go along with it. So whether you're on Mac or PC, whether you're used to using QuickTime or you could even use Zoom to record your presentation, there's a number of ways to do it. There are video tutorials of how to do it. There's hard copy PDFs you can print off. And so the directions are very clear and should walk almost anybody through the process. So
and they can find those on the meeting site?
on the meeting site. Yep. If you're, if you go under program on our AFS annual meeting.fisheries.org, you'll see that there's instructions for oral presenters and instructions for poster presenters.
Okay. You know what, Joe? I will put those in the show notes so we can help out any of our listeners that are still in a somewhat of a bind like myself and still need to upload their talk. So let's jump into some of the components of the meeting. Did you want to list some of those for the listeners?
Sure. So the meeting is organized around themes. So every day for the 2 weeks has a theme associated with it. And that will really provide a lot of the coherence for that day. So, you know, some of the themes have to do with President Scott Bonar's main tasks as president, you know, climate change, science communication. Other days recognize sort of emerging issues in the world of fisheries research and management, like our Diversity and Inclusion Day. We have days that are specific to particular fisheries. We have a British Isles and European Fisheries Day. We have a Latin America Day. We have a Canada Day. And so there's sort of a little bit of something for everybody in these theme days. One of the biggest days that we have will be our Student Day, Student and Early Career Professionals Day. There's a number of activities that Heather Stewart and her group are organizing that will serve a number of our students and those early career professionals.
Right, and she's president of that section.
That's correct, the student subsection of the education section, correct. Right.
And I think Julie did an interview with Heather that will come out for the listeners to enjoy as well. And you mentioned receptions and happy hours, the film festival. We have the cast panels, which I will also talk to Drew about in another interview. Oh, the workshops. Did you mention those?
I didn't mention those. So there's a couple of workshops that you can sign up for, a really great two-day Bayesian workshop. And there's also a really special opportunity. So one of the plenary speakers, Marcy McGinn, who is on going to be on Wednesday, September, what would that be, the 16th, I guess. Marcy McGinnis, excuse me. She'll be presenting, she was formerly a vice president of CBS News, and she'll be presenting a plenary that day. And we'll also be working with Carolyn Hall, who's a colleague of hers at the Alan Alda Institute for Communicating Science. And they will be presenting a workshop. And this is a highly selective workshop. There's only spots for 24 participants. And so there's a special a way to apply to participate in that workshop. And so that's all going to be about communicating your science. You know, if you're someone that works regularly with the media or could be in the future, you might look into participating in that.
That's workshop. Great. And did the SciComm workshop precede the meeting and then the Bayesian workshop followed the meeting?
I think that the Bayesian is the first 2 days, and the science, the AFS media training workshop will be either Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday. So they've got three options for a 2-hour workshop there. And so there's additional details about that that I can, maybe you could link to through the podcast notes.
Definitely. So awards, are awards still happening this year?
Awards will be happening. And the really kind of the different thing this year, but maybe a little bit more exciting, is that the awards will be incorporated with the particular plenary sessions throughout the conference. So, you know, some of them, not to give anything away, but, you know, the student awards will be during the student day, and there will be, you know, other themed awards that will be distributed throughout the different plenary days.
That's great. I was on a committee for one of the awards this year, and so it's really an awesome experience to be able to kind of see it from that side and actually just see how many amazing things people accomplish in their careers. I encourage everybody to participate in that when they can in the future. We did not talk about the spawning run. That's one of my favorite things about the meeting. Is that still happening?
The spawning run is happening. We have some really impressive Ray Troll artwork to go along with our t-shirts this year. Information on the spawning run and how to participate virtually is also on the annual meeting website. One of the new things this year is teams. So there are teams that are competing against one another. I guess the AFS Bethesda staff says that they're taking on all comers this year. So I'm not exactly sure how that's all going to work out. And another new event for us this year, or actually in the last couple of years, is we're going to be doing a virtual stream cleaning. So we were planning a stream cleaning event for volunteers here in Columbus. And with the transition to the virtual annual meeting, our local planner, Christy Arend, decided to take this online with a couple of AFS staff members. And so Christy's working on the spawning run. Some of the AFS staff members are working on the virtual cleanup. It looks like there's four virtual cleanups already scheduled. And so the neat thing with this is that as you schedule your event, it drops a map or drops a pin on a Google map. And so you can see where all of these virtual cleanup events are going on. And even right now we have sort of nationwide, in the U.S. anyways, nationwide coverage of those stream cleanups.
So is it something that just like an individual can do?
It is, although it's, you know, contributions by chapters and organizing events are encouraged. And, you know, there's particular guidelines about staying physically distant and mask wearing and things like that during the pandemic. But we're looking to get groups of people together to, you know, society members, chapter members to sort of give back a little bit along with the meeting.
Yeah, that's a fantastic idea. And is that new this year?
Well, we've done it a couple times in the past, and the intent in the program committee, or I'm sorry, the meeting committee in Columbus was to sort of attempt to continue the momentum on this AFS Gives Back. And so we had a couple of other events planned, and as we transitioned to the virtual space, we decided that this virtual stream cleanup would be a good way to continue that. So it's really not a new event. It's new certainly because it's virtual this year, but it was really built more about building the momentum of that and carrying on what others have done in the past. I think one of the first big events was maybe a Southern Division meeting in Puerto Rico. There was a beach cleanup. I wasn't there, but I've heard some of the Southern Division people talking about that.
Yeah, I think that's a fantastic idea. And for groups that have like students, that might be a really great student activity. Obviously masks and with social distancing, but really for cleanups, sometimes you want to wear gloves and masks anyways. we want to remind everyone where they can go to sign up, right? And that's at the afsannualmeeting.fisheries.org/registration site. You don't have to be an AFS member, but it's cheaper, right? And so you can also join AFS on the site. Correct?
That's right. All of what you said is correct. And there's certainly a benefit this year to being a member with reduced rates relative to non-members. In a normal year, an annual meeting is a great place to recruit new members or have previous members re-engage with the society. And so we've attempted to provide some incentive to do that here too by having discounted rates for members.
So just kind of off the cuff, Joe, what do you think some of the biggest benefits to AFS membership are? Like if not in general, but you personally, or, you know, what's the great thing about being an AFS member?
I think really the best thing about being an AFS member is just the people. You know, you might have access to other fisheries professionals without membership, but having an AFS membership, especially a society membership, gives you that access to so many more people all over the country, throughout Canada, throughout Mexico, Latin America. You know, I've been really lucky to meet a number of those people through time, especially with this meeting. So volunteering is really giving back to the society has been a really big benefit to me, along with these connections that you make by putting symposia on, participating in other people's sessions that they do, volunteering at whether it's chapter, division, section, or society level. I mean, it's a professional society. So it's a society for professionals who do the same thing. And I think that's what we're trying to foster and encourage, is interactions among people who have similar interests to advance our profession. And that's what I'm really trying to do with my volunteering here. I know it's what other volunteers on the virtual annual meeting organizing committee are trying to do. And so that's been the biggest benefit for me with society membership.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, I always feel like my knowledge of fisheries just moves forward an incredible amount with each meeting that I attend. I just learned so much.
I completely agree with you. And I think that this year's just a really great opportunity to have access to so much information. I'm really excited to see how that aspect of the meeting goes. You know, how much do people use the science? You know, how much do they access presentations even after the meeting's done? That will be a really interesting thing to see. You know, how much more interaction is there with authors, you know, people reaching out to presenters even after the meeting? That's going to be, it's a really interesting experiment that we're running this year.
It is. And I think that's a really great thing to remind everybody that, you know, many of us will have to keep working, right? Because there isn't an actual on-site meeting. So we'll have to keep working our jobs and attending. You have access for weeks and weeks and months after the meeting. And so you have a lot of time to catch up, right?
That's right. And, you know, we haven't yet crossed the bridge on how long these presentations will be up. There's some considerations with, you know, some federal content and how long can that be up. There's other considerations, you know, maybe the analysis changes a little bit and really the science changes. And so it's probably not something that will stay up, you know, long term, you know, not on the order of years, but certainly for months after the conference, we'll have all of this information up there and people will continue to be able to access it. And so it is a real resource. You know, you talked earlier in the podcast about challenges and opportunities. And I really think that this is one of the great opportunities of this conference and this format, is that it's all right there for you to consume. And so it'll be interesting to see how people do that.
Right, because on site, you might miss something that you thought would be incredible to see just because it happens to be in a hotel that's too many blocks away for you to get over in time. And so this will kind of eliminate that. And so the meeting costs a lot less than an in-person meeting. There's not hotel expenses. There's not food expenses. And so it's about $100 to $300 for non-members. How did the meeting committee set that pricing structure?
So the meeting committee worked with Bethesda staff to run some pricing models, you know, some simple Excel spreadsheets of, you know, with fixed costs, which we could identify, you know, what does it cost for different levels of access to the conference software, how many GoToMeeting, GoToWebinar lines do you need, how much do those cost, you know, those sorts of fixed costs. And then they tried to do some estimating of staff time and how much staff time was devoted to this project. Obviously, those were, you know, those are a little bit variable, fuzzy sort of costs. And so when those models were run, it came out with, you know, we tried to estimate the number of attendees we would have in the various categories. And I think that those numbers were based off of maybe the Tampa meeting or the Atlantic City meeting. You know, how many students did we have? How many early career professionals? How many non-members? Those sorts of things. And running those numbers and, you know, and attempting to perform some magic there, these were the prices that were actually proposed to the management committee and the governing board of AFS. And those were the costs, the registration costs that were decided upon by those entities, by the management committee of AFS. And so it was both the meeting committee and the management committee and governing board that decided on what the costs would be.
Okay. And this in some ways can benefit folks that are somewhat fund limited, which is a lot of us, and especially sometimes students. And so what are some benefits for students?
I think that, as I've been saying, that one of the main benefits of students is that, number one, their science gets out there If there were no AFS annual meeting, you know, there's going to be a number of students who have only so many opportunities to present, and you would basically be removing one of those. Another great benefit of the students is all of the activities that Heather Stewart and the student subsection have planned. Third benefit is just the interaction with all of the scientists who will be participating in this. There's also going to be job boards and those sorts of things going around. But I think that there's just a number of benefits for students with this format and also with this meeting.
Right. How to become a more job alluring candidate. Is that
That's it.
One of the opportunities?
That's what I've heard. I've not seen that posted yet online anywhere, but I've certainly read that before. So I'm looking forward to reading or participating in that. Yep.
And so how might the format actually bring in a wider audience? I mean, you mentioned some opportunities for a more international audience. Were there other ways that were other opportunities to expand the audience this year?
I do think that there are ways to expand the audience. So I'm going to give you an Ohio-centric example. So ordinarily, you know, maybe a handful of Ohio Division of Wildlife employees would actually get to travel to the meeting. Maybe more this year if it would have been in Columbus, you know, we would have had the registration here. But this year, we can use employee development funds, whether through the union that many of our employees are part of, or we can use some state employee development funds to register for this conference as a continuing education opportunity. And so this year, I mean, nearly our entire staff could participate if they wanted to and have it paid for free, essentially, using union dollars or other state funds that are available for development. And so, you know, our attendees could go from 5 to 10 to 15 to 25. I mean, I don't know how many people plan to participate, but there is a lot of opportunity this year to get more people who wouldn't ordinarily go to a meeting and see 750 presentations. There's a real opportunity to get those people involved.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So we'll see with the feedback at the end of the conference how more or less accessible this made everything for folks. And I think that'll be really interesting. And that kind of leads into my next question, is the future, right? So can we expect online elements to future meetings? Even if we can go back to in-person meetings, might there be online elements?
Well, it sure, you know, I don't know anything about anything really, but it sure feels like there's an opportunity for some of this to be carried forward, whether it's, and maybe it's just worth talking about, you know, again, an Ohio example. On March 11th, we had to have a statewide meeting, and we, you know, stumbled and bumbled our way through a Skype meeting. I mean, now we're nearly experts on Teams. Everybody knows how to have these meetings, and we, you know, there's no need for us to drive across the state and meet in a conference room really anymore. Except for those really targeted reasons. And so I think that there is, you know, the technology is much better now than it was 6 months ago, and we're all used to using it. But at the same time, I don't think there's really any replacement for meeting in person and making those new connections and seeing things you wouldn't ordinarily see because you walk into the wrong room or something like that, you know? And so there's always going to be a place for in-person meetings. I'm sure there will be some supplementation, and there will be some particular opportunities for virtual meetings in the future. I just hope they're not due to pandemics or natural disasters or who knows what. So
definitely, because we're going to miss out on shocking in Ohio this year. I was looking forward to that.
There's going to be all sorts of fun things that were going on in Ohio, yeah. But maybe in the future.
What else did you want to share with us, Joe, about the meeting? What didn't we cover that you maybe wanted everyone to know about or to be excited about this year?
Well, I think that everyone should be excited, excited for the unknown. Maybe this is a really great time to embrace the uncertainty and try something new. you know, I'm a scientist. I'm not really a party planner or, you know, really much of a supervisor, I guess, either. I don't know anything about that stuff, but the science of this meeting really excites me. There's a wide diversity of things, of presentations. There's going to be a lot of great posters. There's, you know, almost 40 symposia. There's 25 contributed sessions, another handful of different poster sessions that things are organized around. And we're going to have really exciting plenaries from people all over the globe, people from different backgrounds, people with different viewpoints. And so I think we've got a little something for everyone. And that's a bit of a cliche, but I really think you can find some really great content here for you, whatever your interests are.
And you can register up until what day? Because we still have plenty of time.
You can register the day you participate. So, and in fact, I mean, you could, theoretically, you could even register after the meeting has taken place, because even those live events are going to be recorded and they're going to be posted. So they'll become content just as soon as they're done. So there's really no reason, you know, there's no reason to wait, but at the same time, you can access this content whenever you want.
Excellent. Excellent. So now the tough part of the interview is over and we are down to the final five questions. So these five questions are ones that Nick, Brett, and Julie typically ask each guest on the Fisheries Pod. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
First one, maybe the hardest one. What is your favorite fish?
I guess I've got two answers. My favorite Ohio fish has got to be like a Lake Erie walleye. I mean, it's just, they're everywhere right now. It's a super fun experience. I mean, anybody can catch them, even I can. So that's a good thing. But I think my favorite fish kind of ever was catching baby Goliath groupers. And I call them babies because they, you know, you could hold them in your two hands under docks down in the Indian River in Florida. Those were really cool fish. So those are my favorites.
Okay. That's a good mental image. Fishing on the dock in Florida. I'm sure we'd all be like to do that right now. You've been a fisheries biologist, or at least in your current position, for about 10 years. And so far, what's your favorite memory that you can share with our listeners from your career so far?
Sure. I think some of my favorite memories are just being out in the field. So actually yesterday and last Thursday were my first times back in the field since COVID hit. And, you know, I was out on March 12th, we were collecting sauger for broodstock production. And March 13th, we were told we were going to be home, you know, for some indeterminate period of time. I didn't expect it to be 5 months, but it was almost 5 months to the day. And so, you know, I think a lot of us get into this field because we enjoy the resource, we enjoy fishing, that sort of thing. And I think being out in the field is just an integral part of what we do. And so really any of those opportunities I really appreciate them.
That's fantastic. What is your dream job or location to work?
That's a good question. So I kind of came up as a limnologist. I mean, all of my graduate work is basically on nutrient limitation and of phytoplankton in Lake Erie. And I used to always think about going to Alaska and doing some of that tundra work on, you know, as these lakes thaw and that sort of thing. What does productivity look like in these newly aquatic systems, maybe softwater systems now. I've always thought that would be a really cool job to do. Of course, you know, I guess there's always, you could go south to, you know, Caribbean or something like that too, which I would be very happy to do that too. But, you know, working in Ohio it's gotta be a dream job for somebody, right?
Oh yeah. There's a lot of really interesting projects that are going on in Ohio.
I'm sure.
And I hope that we get a chance to talk more about those on another pod. So if money were not an issue, so this can actually relate to your last answer, what is one project you would really like to work on?
Boy, I think I'd probably go back to doing some of that, you know, Arctic work. I just think that there's a lot to learn up there, kind of untapped, unexplored systems, a number of them. And yeah, it'd be kind of fun to go somewhere extremely remote and do that kind of work.
Definitely. It was a pleasure speaking with you and hearing about the AFS Society meeting. I cannot thank you enough for all the hard work getting the meeting together this year and everyone involved in the meeting. It's fantastic what you all have put together.
And even more information will be coming, you know, over the next couple of days and weeks. I really appreciate you having me on the podcast today.
But if they want to get hold of you, perhaps a listener today has a lot of money, Joe, to get you to those lakes in AK. How can they reach out to you and give you those funds to complete that work?
Sure thing. Joseph, J-O-S-E-P-H .Conroy, C-O-N-R-O-Y @dnr.state.oh.us. Such an easy email address.
That's awesome. So thank you, Joe. And the rest of you can reach the pod on Twitter, again, at Fisherman's Pod. Find us on Facebook. We always enjoy hearing ideas for the show. Going to continue this year. So thank you so much, Joe. And I will see you virtually at the meeting. And I hope that we see a lot of our listeners there as well.
Thanks again, Sue.
So for our second AFS annual meeting interview, I'd like to welcome Drew Banta Winters, Policy Director for the American Fisheries Society. Drew joined us on the Fisheries Podcast this past April to discuss the new Navigable Waters Protection Rule and its potential impact. Today, Drew is joining us to talk about one of the theme days at the upcoming meeting, the Cast Day. So Drew, welcome, and thanks for joining us again on the podcast.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me today. I'm excited to talk about our virtual annual meeting and all the exciting programming we have planned for CAS Day.
So Drew, what is CAS?
So CAS is an acronym for the Consortium of Aquatic Science Societies. It's a group of 9 aquatic science organizations, including AFS and others like the Society of Freshwater Science and the Society of Wetland Scientists. Collectively, these groups have a membership of 20,000, and we work to present the best available science surrounding aquatic resources, and we participate in policy development and dissemination. So it really is broader than policy, though, but that's what we work on mostly together. It is an opportunity for these societies to collaborate on issues that are common to all of the societies, to be a sounding board, and to work together on important issues like diversity, equity, and inclusion, and others. Sometimes it's coordinating on meetings. In fact, we have a really exciting meeting in 2021. The next Joint Aquatic Science Societies meeting will be in Michigan, in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and we'll be talking about that at CAS Day as well at our virtual annual meeting.
Oh, that's terrific. And in a separate conversation, you had mentioned that some of these societies just don't have any infrastructure in place to deal with policy. And so CAS actually kind of provides that avenue.
Absolutely. So somehow I ended up as the executive secretary for this organization, but I'm also AFS's policy director. I am the only paid policy staffer for any of the organizations. So what I do is I work to bring all of the societies together. We bring opportunities to the group to work on policy opportunities, and then we gather up the expertise of all of the members of all of the organizations and bring that to bear on our policy engagement. So SWS has a sort of a policy infrastructure in that they have a some ad hoc committees to work on policy. But again, AFS is the only one with any institutional capacity to really work on policy issues. So it's a real strength of AFS, and it's a really great partnership. It brings a lot of leverage to our policy efforts to have all of the organizations working together for the common cause.
Oh, that's fantastic. And I encourage our listeners to go back to that April podcast that we did together, but they're going to hear about some of the same issues because they're still ongoing on the CAS Day at the upcoming meeting. So what's on tap for CAS Day at the 2020 meeting?
Great. So we've got two big events. CAS Day is September 23rd, Wednesday, September 23rd from 1 to 3 at the AFS Virtual Annual Meeting. It is open to any member of any science society that is a member of CAS. And we are going to be talking about two major things. One is the policy work that we do together, focusing on our Clean Water Act interaction, the WOTUS work we've been doing, the Navigable Waters Protection Rule, and our recent win in the Maui groundwater case before the Supreme Court. So that's one exciting event that we'll have. The other one is a panel discussion of the society presidents, who will be getting together to explore the relevance of aquatic science societies in the future and how we will jointly be dealing with diversity, equity, and inclusion and policy and why it's so important for our organizations to be involved with those topics, those issues.
Excellent. And so how can folks listen into that or participate in any of these activities?
So there's a registration link on the AFS virtual annual meeting site. I believe we're going to give some sort of code or registration for this particular day. So you can go to the AFS website and you can get a link to our annual meeting. And we'll be sending some information out to the CAS member societies so that they can join this day for free.
Do you have anything else to kind of add about CAS Day or what you hope to accomplish?
So this is an opportunity to let other members of all the societies have a better idea of what we're doing collectively. And provide opportunities for more people to get involved, particularly in our policy efforts. You know, there is always a role for members of these organizations to share their expertise. Sometimes it's working to develop a science paper on a particular policy issue. Sometimes it's getting involved in a Hill briefing or potentially in providing some information for a Supreme Court brief. So there are lots of different opportunities, or maybe even a regulatory comment letter, particularly for members who don't want to put their name on a particular policy initiative. It gives them an opportunity to make a difference and share their expertise without having to maybe go out a little bit further than they would be comfortable with in the policy arena.
And what are some examples of some of the letters that you've written lately or some of the issues that you've been working on over the past year or so?
We have really focused in on clean water issues. So the new Navigable Waters Protection Rule, which is the Trump administration's definition for waters of the U.S. under the Clean Water Act, we've really, really focused on that particularly. We've done everything, like I said, from regulatory comment letters to Hill briefings on that, to letters to Capitol Hill, and even a brief in the lawsuits that have been hitting the district courts challenging the Navigable Waters Protection Rule. So there's a wide variety of work that we've done on that. We've got another letter coming up that we're working on jointly related to water quality criteria for lakes and reservoirs. So it's not always limited to Clean Water Act issues. Sometimes it's broader than that. You know, AFS works on issues like marine aquaculture and bringing science and technical information to policymakers to help them understand, you know, changes that have reduced the environmental footprint of marine aquaculture. We also work on issues like Pebble Mine, where we might analyze the environmental impact statement and what it says about fisheries and to see where the deficiencies might be to make sure that, you know, fish are properly considered as this environmental document is finalized. So we have a broad range of work that we do at AFS on policy and even within CAS on our joint efforts.
How would somebody get involved in these efforts? Who would they reach out to?
So each one of the 9 aquatic science societies that belong to CAS have a representative. You can go to your leadership and find out who your rep is. And if there are issues that you want to work on jointly on policy, you can raise them through your CAS representative, or you can always just contact me. I'm happy to be a conduit for those sorts of inquiries, particularly where it relates to policy.
So do you want to remind our listeners what your email is?
Yeah, it's dwinters@fisheries.org.
Oh, that's excellent, Drew. So we haven't visited in a few months. And what are some of the new policy issues that maybe you haven't mentioned yet in our conversation that you'd like to share now with our listeners?
Oh, yes. I'd love to talk about our climate policy development and where we hope to go with that in the future. So AFS has had a really great year working on climate, developing some policy recommendations, a climate statement that's been joined by 60 societies so far around the world, calling for the need to reduce greenhouse gas emissions and to demonstrate the impacts of climate change on fish. And communications initiatives, so some science communications training to help fisheries professionals talk about impacts to fish from climate change in a way that will resonate with non-technical audiences. So we have a lot on the burner on climate. Some of it's still being developed and we're still working to finalize some of our climate policy recommendations, but I really look forward to going to the Hill with that information and helping policymakers understand the social and economic implications for fish and fisheries and human communities as a result of climate change. I think it's the defining issue of our time. And I think AFS has been working really hard to develop a long-term program to be able to engage in climate advocacy.
That's fantastic. And so this is really a way for many of us who went into fisheries or wildlife or related fields because we just want to save the environment. And so working with you and other CAS societies on these issues is really kind of a way to actually feel like we're making a difference.
Yeah, it's so important to have the expertise of our members to bring to bear. You know, I'm not a scientist, so I really do rely on our members to share their expertise and to help me understand so that I can communicate the information to policymakers. I mean, it's been a great joy working with some of our scientists who have shared their expertise, particularly like you and Marzeka Sullivan on Clean Water Act issues. It's been really fun.
And it's also an opportunity for those of us that work in admired in technical terms to have you remind us that we kind of need to be, you force us to translate that, and through translating that into terms that non-scientists can understand, I think we really learn about our own work in a new way. And so I encourage everybody to participate in the process because it's a really eye-opening experience, and you make it somewhat painless, Drew. Maybe you're great at what you do. And so thank you for taking the time to talk to me today. And in April, when we last visited on the podcast, you shared with us your favorite fish. And can you remind us what that fish was? And is it still the same fish?
It's the red snapper, because it's delicious and it's beautiful. And I'm from Louisiana, and so it will always be my favorite fish.
That's fantastic. Mine periodically changes, so I commend you for staying the course with your favorite fish.
Maybe I'm just not very imaginative.
Well, we like it. It's very fitting. Thanks again for visiting with us. I look forward to seeing you virtually this year at the meeting, and I look forward to the CAS Day and the other theme days of the meeting. So, and thanks again for all your hard work, Drew. You really make a difference across all these societies, and we're really lucky to have you specifically in AFS.
Oh, well, I'm happy to do it, and it's been such a pleasure working with you. Thank you for having me today.